Right now it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And if I did things right, we've got Cynthia with us. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
And Janet with us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Janet. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. As we move through a week in here. And what makes you feel even more excellent is the picture on the front page of the Lakeville Journal the garden centers you're talking about. And there's a great picture of the Coons there. And just, you know, I watched baseball on TV now to see the green. And now you see the garden centers coming to life. It just makes you know that, you know what, we're beginning to transition to the period I love.
I'm always the one that's that likes to be very gloomy and say it's not really spring yet. It's going to snow again. And so it's not really spring yet. It is going to snow. Yeah. But boy, does it feel great to have this little bit of warmth and green. It's like going to Florida for a week. And really one of the great signs of hope that the long winter will finally end is when the garden centers open. Normally, Paley's is the first to open. This year, they were scheduled to be the last to open. Most of the garden centers are opening on March 20th. Paley's, of course, had a lot that they were up against. I think we all remember the big tornado last year that took down their greenhouses. But they were all ready to go on March 20th, even though their sign says they're not open until the 27th. They are open. Did a soft opening because the weather was so good. Foreign's has been open, I believe, through the whole winter. McEnroe's has been open through the winter. Kent Greenhouse and Garden has been doing business through the winter, but the garden center is now open. And we had an interesting conversation with Sarah and Chris Kuhn, who now own Paley's Farm. Sarah is Charlie Paley's sister, about the rebuilding of the greenhouses, which was really a big trauma in the middle of a traumatic 2020. Took down, I think, three of their growing greenhouses, so they've got them all built up again. But they were talking a lot about the shortages. Last year, we all remember the garden centers had shortages of seeds because there was an unexpected surge in people worried about the food supply and also people sort of up here in the country in a way that they normally wouldn't be at that time of year in the spring. So this year there's not only going to be additional people gardening, but the seed companies were understaffed because of COVID last autumn and were not able to properly dry and save the seeds as they normally would. Plus, of course, there's a lot of need from the commercial growers. So what they're and they're having a shortage of staff to package the retail seeds, which of course are much smaller packets with fewer seeds. So the companies are they're focusing on their commercial growers largely. So this is going to be a good year to buy starts as opposed to seeds. But if you want to get seeds, this might be a good year to do it early. Same thing with dirt and peat pots. Of course, Freund's in East Canaan, famous for their peat pots made from cow manure. You can still get those at the shop on Route 44.
Route 44, yeah.
And then McEnroe, and I think probably Friends says too, it's a good year to buy garden dirt by the truckload as opposed to in the plastic bag, and ultimately better for the planet anyway.
Yeah, and along with that story, which is your story, which is a big story on that side of the page, a really nice story, first of all, Wendy Miller, who just received a great award in the state, but also, there's a story about how Audubon is emerging from COVID. Their annual Maple Fest, which is sold out, by the way, but they had the Zoom event on maple sugaring. If you want to, you can walk the grounds at the Audubon Center. That's also just another thing that brings spring and summer one step closer.
It's muddy, of course, as we know, and there's the wonderful little path with the maple trees that have the old-fashioned buckets attached to them so you can walk by and hear the sap plinking. But my reports from people who are collecting is that the sap collection is almost over. It's been a weird season for maple syrup in the way that Hollywood is very obsessed with the movie industry. The Northwest Corner is very obsessed with maple sap production. So the trees need warm, sunny days and very cold below freezing nights. And we had this weird warm spell that was lovely in the middle of it, but it was not great for sap production. And it's been good again the last few days, but now the trees are starting to bud up and turn red. So there was a limit to how much can be made. But last year was a very good year, so you can still buy last year's syrup. It doesn't go bad it really doesn't go bad. It's got so much sugar in it, but you can buy last year's syrup. It's just as good as this year's. They have it at Audubon. You can watch their, as you said, their Zoom presentation from the library, but they did have a live in-person, I think it was their first in-person event, and Wendy Miller, we've been lucky to have her here for many, many years now, does a great job with programming.
And she won that award from the state. It slips my mind now, but it was just announced this week. They,
it's on A. We have a picture and a story on A2 if you want to know.
All right. I know, but I just forgot.
I know. Me too.
It's good to have
She's great.
That's what happens at 68.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So that's why there's print. The beauty of print.
That's exactly right. That's why radio and print go together so well. We can give the high points and print can fill in everything else that needs to be filled in that either I don't remember to or we don't have the room to. Nice story by Patrick Sullivan once again, and it's a local take on a worldwide situation, that is the future of the U.S.-China relationship.
Which is a little bit chilling to read this article, but it was very good. And Patrick said she was so interesting, he could have gone on longer. And I believe you can still watch this Zoom talk from the Salisbury Forum on their website. But a very interesting woman, Bonnie Glazer, talking about the Internet and China's relationship to the Internet and also to artificial intelligence. And people are kind of saying that the future of China is going to be largely automated, which is so ironic in a nation with so many people in it. But a lot about Taiwan, about the possibility of war, about economics. It's really, I would say, China in a way that Russia used to be so much part of our consciousness during the Cold War. It really is becoming China that's the country that we have to always be a little bit aware of over our shoulder.
Right, and you've got a story on the front page, Housing Hearing Online, and the next issue, basically, it's been continued, that meeting anyway.
It's continued right from the beginning of the meeting. They were like, well, this is going to have to go to April 14th. But so, Patrick, and so the meeting was on Monday night. We could have rushed it into this issue, but they're so complex, these meetings, and they go on really late. So we rather would have Patrick Sullivan writing it when he's fresh and able to really think about it and do a complete job. So as we did with the last iteration of this hearing on a proposed affordable housing project in Lakeville. We're going to post it online on Thursday. Patrick watched it Monday night, but he really sat down and watched it in detail yesterday. It's a 4-hour and 20-minute meeting, knowing that it's going to be continued to April 14th. So a lot was discussed, a lot of passions about this topic, strong feelings pro and con from people that we like on both sides. And this is an ongoing, important conversation for all of our communities.
All right, and you've got a nice story on page A3, honoring women who have sparked positive change in the community and the world.
Caroline Birchfield, who truly is one of the most extraordinary women around here and is a community member at the Hotchkiss School, but also does organizes lots of events, all of the events for Noble Horizons and for other organizations here, and manages to do a lot of kind of town and gown where she'll connect up teachers at Hotchkiss, and they'll do adult education classes in really fascinating topics. So she was working with a group of students in the senior class at Hotchkiss, and she had actually reached out to us and said, think of some names of extraordinary women around here. And the list is so long, it was easy to just immediately come up with at least a half a dozen names for her. And she assigned four of her students to talk to four women in two in New York State, two here in Connecticut. Very different people. They contribute to the community in very different ways. And the kids did a great job of interviewing these people, bringing their 21st century sensibility to these conversations, and did nice write-ups on it. So we strongly recommend you read it. Really interesting.
Entangled Lines, fishing season, back.
I know. We've actually been holding this because it's been there's been so much going on, we had to hold it. But Patrick wrote this before Governor Lamont snuck in his beginning of fishing season. So you will see kids out already walking down to the factory pond in Lakeville with their rods and lines. I'm sure the same thing is happening in Kent and other parts of the area where you can get out the river. But it's fishing season.
All right. And budgets. Sharon's annual town budget, that hearing is going to come up April 30th. The selectmen have been working on it with the Board of Finance.
An interesting link between this page and the prior page, which is Sharon has decided not to contribute toward the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon's renovation, which has now passed two of the three hurdles ahead of it. They're hoping that they might even be able to break ground this summer. This is a multi-year, I would say, more than a decade conversation about the expansion of the library, which is on a very small, very limited lot in the center of town. The library was a gift to the town from Mariah Hotchkiss. It's ironic when you think about it that at the time when it was gifted, there was probably nothing around it. But it's on a very small lot, and because of zoning restrictions, it can't easily be expanded. And, of course, it's a beautiful old Richardsonian-style building that people really love. but inside it's extremely cramped. The bathroom is about the size of a postage stamp. There's no way that you can get in any part of the building with a wheelchair. It is beautiful, but they do a lot of programs there, so they're hoping that they can expand out a little bit and make it accessible as it should be.
All right, and then once again, the library and the fire department in Kent with the finances they're putting together.
Right, and all of our towns donate quite a bit to the libraries, and even though the libraries get support from the towns, from the townspeople, they do get a lot of support from town government, but also the fire departments. And it's really an interesting question that Janet and I have discussed with a lot of people as we look at our own funding model. And you have to wonder, like, there's so many things that are so important to people to support that are so essential, and one of them is a library. And there's a lot of data showing, especially in COVID, how heavily those libraries are being used, even when they were closed, being heavily used. But also, the fire departments, really essential, and the ambulances. So in Kent, they're talking about balancing the amount of donation, which actually had been higher to the library and lower to the fire department. They're talking about bringing the fire department up, the library down. An interesting conversation that maybe will have an impact on other towns. And another topic is the cost of getting rid of trash is going up. The cost to the towns, and so that means that the cost of transfer station stickers is going to go up. Salisbury and Sharon actually have a remarkably low rate, considering what a beautiful facility we have. Towns like Kent, I think, are double or sometimes maybe even four times as much. New York State, I think, is also much higher. So we'll be looking at the possibility of higher transfer station fees coming up.
All right. And speaking about that, the story that Patrick Sullivan about getting the food waste out of the garbage stream.
Right, because food waste is really heavy. It's wet. And a lot of people, I certainly know that for myself, I live right in town in Lakeville, and I won't compost because there's so many bears that travel through my yard, and the bears just really love to come and toss your compost bin. But the garbage, if you can eliminate food waste from your garbage, it eliminates a lot of bulk but also a lot of weight. And so the garbage that we send to be disposed of statewide, a lot, two of the heaviest things are paper, which gets wet and starts to weigh a lot, but also your compostable food. So if there's a way for the transfer station, our big, beautiful transfer station in Salisbury and Sharon, to have a compost bin, that would be a great thing. And then we would all just save up our compost as we do with our regular garbage.
I was just going to say that's a great idea because I know somebody who has pigs, okay? And whatever food waste that we have, we give to them. They give to the pigs.
And pigs and goats.
Yeah,
garbage disposals. Yeah.
So there's a lot of different ways to do it. Well, we'll wrap up a budget talk about Falls Village as they had their special budget meeting.
Right, everybody's moving toward the end of their budget seasons. North Canaan has been, but the message that we're getting is that it's been a very weird budget year in North Canaan. So we don't have those numbers yet. We're hoping to get them, even though there's been a first presentation, I think, to the Board of Finance. But it sounds like the numbers came back and that there's going to be some adjustment on it. But again, in Falls Village, talking about the transfer station and about the possibility of higher fees, and there was some consternation in Falls Village, some fear that they might not be having a public town meeting, public hearing, as had been the case last budget season because of COVID. Henry Todd saying, no, definitely we will do a town meeting that will be open to the public.
All right. Now, you've got a story that's on page A6. And it's something I was talking about the other day on the air, strange enough, and that is disinformation. People talk about fake news and this and that. This is a great article on how you might possibly counter disinformation, which is running rampant in this country.
Oh, my gosh, horrible. And Peter Kaufman, who is a really brilliant guy and lives right in Lakeville, and his daughter Sophia, one of our all-time favorite summer interns, has written this very interesting book, and complex, but a lot about the Internet and about information and how we share it. Really interesting coverage from Patrick of his talk, but we also had an interesting interview with him in Compass a few weeks ago. So you can find that all in the print edition, and you can find Fred Baumgarten's article about Peter on our website, tricornernews.com.
All right, I want to go to the opinion pages now. Janet will start off. And once again, back-to-back in our country, some mass shootings. The editorial, now is the time to pass federal gun reform legislation. That's the key here. Don't have a patchwork of 50 different laws. There should be just one sustainable law that is the same in every state.
That's right. And, Connecticut has strong gun laws now that have had a good effect. But if you're surrounded by states that do not, we're all at risk, obviously. And so Two bills have already passed through the House of Representatives and are moving toward the Senate. It is time for gun reform legislation, and we lay out the reasons why. This gun violence changes communities. It can be mass shootings. It can be individual shootings. I think everyone in this area remembers when there were gun deaths here, too, and they all stand out. It changes families. It changes entire groups. It changes America. So this deserves attention now. Taking a look on Facebook, for instance, and you do a search on petitions on gun control, the majority of those that pop up first are all against any legislation. So there's a lot of noise out there about how this is against Americans' rights, but America needs to be a safe place to live as well as having rights. So this is the time when we make that argument.
All right. And lots of letters, a lot of letters on the Holly Block. I mean, this is turned into a huge issue in Salisbury.
It's true, and it's ongoing, and I look forward to reading Patrick's story on the meeting on Monday. But we have opinions from all sides and really strong opinions, so don't miss these letters. We have them from the Volstats this week and George Massey, Judith McGuire. You know, it's such an important issue for, as Cynthia noted, not only Salisbury, but the region, to see how affordable housing can get done. So this is, and, you know, we welcome all letters on it. I got another letter in this week that said, oh, boy, I bet you're tired of seeing these housing letters. But quite the opposite. The more involved our community is in planning, the more likely we'll have a successful outcome.
All right, and some of your viewpoints, normalcy returns, and then the problems of living with racism?
That's right. Dick Hollis is back after a hiatus, and so we're very happy to have him back on our pages. He writes about normalcy returning as a real word after a century, because when it first showed up, it was not a real word. They called it a malapropism, normalcy, and it was Warren G. Harding who was made fun of because he was using it. So, as always, Dick gives us really good perspective, history, and it's fascinating. We have Lonnie Carter on the problems of living with racism and what it does to people and all of us.
All right. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left here, 4.5 minutes left. Let's take a look at compasses. That's a couple of pages that are full of color and stories.
Victoria LaBalme is apparently one of the top she's sort of a coach on performance and a keynote speaker. And somebody had emailed me and said, I'm Henry LaBalme, and I live in Cornwall, and my sister Victoria has this new book out. And by the way, she was the inquiring photographer for the Lakeville Journal when she was 17. So, of course, how are we not going to interview Victoria LaBalme, who turns out to be this wonderful, lovely person, and really interesting book. It's encouraging, and she has an interesting background, New York City and Cornwall, and had one of these super type A on the track childhoods, you know, went to St. Paul's School, which is one of the top prep schools in the country, and then, you know, went on to college and then got out. And I think as many young people from this area know, when they leave these, you know, I'm always the achiever, and then they get out of school and there's no structure, and it's like stepping off the edge of a cliff. And so she searched around for many years trying to figure out what was her path going to be and how was she going to find happiness. She's super smart. She ended up studying with Marcel Marceau, the mime, and so she was an actress for many years. And she developed this keynote speech that she does at places, and it's all about not knowing what your next step is going to be. And if you've ever been with an anxious person, you know that that's their problem, is that they're always trying to game out the next 10 years. And she's like, you know what, sometimes it's better just to just lean forward into the risk. So, fascinating book, and she's in conversation with House of Books in Kent, the Scoville Library here in Salisbury, and I'm also possibly going to do a talk to students at Hotchkiss, who I think will really find her message resonating. But up until March 30th, if you order the book ahead of time, she's got a website with all sorts of little Easter eggs that you can get that will disappear on the 30th. So information on how to get the book, which will be at Oblong Books in Millerton, New York. And then we've got Bunny Williams and John Roselli. Bunny Williams, such a generous person, such a hero to our community, has done so much in her quiet way and with such elegance, and doing a Zoom talk as a fundraiser for the Cornwall Library, Litchfield Jazz Fest, doing a concert online, a really nice, a lovely story by Alex Wilburn about a photo show at the Falls Village Library, the D.M. Hunt. Alex lives here in Falls Village, and like many people, he goes out for sanity breaks and just walks around town, and he's got this very interesting perspective on town. And Rebecca Bloomfield and Adam Scher did a show at the library about just sort of seeing people on their porches and seeing people on the street, and they took these beautiful photos and did these little write-ups and conversations with them. So Alex reports on that. I highly recommend reading it. We've been going through all of our old photo negatives from like 1970 to about 2000, and they're wonderful in so many ways, but there was just this moment, I was looking at all these photos from the 70s, where there was just this burst of wild plaid patterning, which you don't normally see. Usually it's very khaki around here. So we've posted those on the internet. Some of the photos are wonderful. That was one of my favorite photos there in that photo. And I just want to quickly talk about something that's been going around. Janet and I had discussed it yesterday, which is there was this article in the New York Times following an article a few weeks ago on in the Wall Street Journal about Millerton and sort of talking about what a great place it is and sort of it's been discovered. And that's really great, and we're happy to see that. But I've also been getting a lot of emails from people sort of pushing back on it and saying they're not really happy about the way that Millerton is being depicted, that it doesn't seem to capture a lot of the soul of it. And I think that's an interesting conversation, too, is our towns and the diversity that we like and the respect that we like to have for our fellow citizens.
Yeah, the Times did that on Millerton, and in Boston, one of the major papers up there did a big story about Great Barrington, how it may be in the boonies, but Great Barrington's not in the boonies.
Right.
It's the same exact type of story.
Yeah.
And both those towns have been towns that have led in the revitalization of bringing people into town with other things to do.
Right. Yeah. And I will say Millerton News certainly depicts Millerton as it really is, so give it a look.
Exactly. And I just want to say, you know, people discover things, and then they think that they've just found it, and it's more like, oh, well, let's transpose what we come from. And it's like, no, guys, actually, we've been here for a while doing our own thing. Why don't you check that out?
Exactly.
Be respectful of the tradition.
Yeah. Watch and learn.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, these stories and more, of course, in the Lakeville Journal, on your newsstands now, home delivery, and on the web, how I get it so I can look at it here at the radio station and stay abreast of you at tricornernews.com. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. And, of course, you can hear this show on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.
And I'm going to add something very quickly. As much as you get it online, we've also gotten a hard copy of that newspaper. You know, every Wednesday, you know, without fail, you also have hard copy.
Yeah, we do. We purchase two Lakeville Journals and a Millerton News. We support local journalism, just like
we actually do what we say.
The Republican American. If it's a local paper, we purchase it and we support it. No doubt about it.